The Global Information Network presents the Member Development Series, How to Have a Good Day Every Day, Part 1.
You are in for a treat this morning. I want to introduce someone who's a very special person, and we are blessed and grateful and fortunate and lucky to have him here today. If you are ready, you're going to get something this morning that you may not be expecting. Many of you are going to have aha moments this morning. Many of you are going to have like, oh, wait a minute. I thought I heard that before. I never heard that before. Now I get it. Ow! So get ready. Get ready. Now, one thing is, we're going to give you a gift. We're going to give you an amazing opportunity this morning to work on that giving recognition vibration. Because I'm going to be introducing somebody, and when we bring them on stage, think of what emotion you want to vibrate. Think of what emotion you want to send to this person. Is it gratitude, thankfulness, excitement, love? What type of emotion, expectation of what you're going to get, thankfulness that he's here? It's going to be powerful. So you're going to have that amazing opportunity when he comes on stage. This gentleman, many of you know, is a longtime friend of mine. He's the first person that I met back in 1979 that got my attitude straight. He's been a longtime friend. I've known him since 1979. I went down to Kerrville, Texas to take his four-day successful life course, and it was one of the most empowering experiences I've ever met. He's been a mentor. He's been a friend of mine. He has been a teacher. He's been a coach. He's been a counselor. He's always been there for me, no matter what. And when I asked him to come, and I told him about Jin, he was there in Cancun at our kickoff, and he's been virtually to every major event, every function, sitting in the audience or in the green room, taking notes. He's still learning. And he has an amazing, amazing background. Even though he is motivational and inspirational and fantastic at presenting the material, he's not a motivational speaker. He's an incredibly successful businessman, and he's an incredibly successful person in life before he ever got on stage to share any information. He made it before he started talking about how to make it. Two-time U.S. congressman, the only person in the last 100 years to be elected to the United States Congress from two separate states. He's had a working relationship with over six U.S. presidents. He has an incredibly successful, prosperous business career in a multitude of businesses, from real estate development, restaurants, construction. This guy has made it. Oil and gas development down in Texas. This guy is the real deal. And after he made all this money and had all this success, he understood that he was employing principles that very few people knew. And if they knew, they would think, oh, well, that's not that important. But it is important. It's what makes the difference. And I invited him, of course, to come here to family reunion to share this very important message. But something happened in the last couple days. And I want to read something to you. On Monday, October 24th, upon return from a three-week tour of Europe, Ed Foreman, who is going to be up here in just a moment, feeling less than his usual energetic self and experiencing shortness of breath, went by the office of Dallas Dr. William Downs for a quick diagnosis, thinking he might be experiencing a touch of pneumonia. Instead, the doctor told Ed that his breathing difficulty appeared to be a very low heart rate coupled with arterial fibrillation, and he was an imminent health risk needing urgent, immediate attention on his heart. Ed told the doctor about his commitment to speak at the Jin family reunion today, and that upon his return to Dallas, after he spoke here, he would schedule to meet with the cardiologist. The doctor replied solemnly, "If you go to the Bahamas, you might not return to Dallas." Insistent that he be seen by a cardiologist immediately, Dr. Downs put Ed in a wheelchair and pushed him down the hall for an EKG and evaluation by a top cardiologist, who confirmed the heart diagnosis and recommended immediate, right now, surgery to put a pacemaker into Ed's chest. "Which is more important, your life or a speaking commitment?" the doctor asked. Ed said, "If you can perform the operation right now and allow me to honor my commitment, I will agree to the operation." A few hours later, 72 hours ago, Ed underwent surgery for a heart pacemaker implant. But Ed is here to keep his commitment. We are blessed and honored to have my close, dear friend. Let him know how you feel, how appreciative you are, Mr. Ed Foreman.
Thank you. Please be seated. Woo! You're terrific. Please be seated. Wow. What a joy. What a joy. When I say I'm glad to be here, I'm really glad to be here. Woo! I got tickled when my assistant, Linda Barrett, sent that little memo to Kevin yesterday. She thought he ought to know about it just in case something happened, you know. And so he confronted me. He said, "What about this?" And I said, "Well, I'm ready to go." He said, "Ready to go?" I said, "I'm ready to go." He said, "Ed, suppose something happens. Suppose you don't make it all the way through your speech." I said, "Oh, Kevin, I'm going to make it." He said, "Supposing you don't." I said, "Well, supposing I don't, in my right pocket, I got two cards. One of them is from MASA, which is a medical assist. If I'm still alive, just load me on that jet and they'll fly me right back to Dallas." I've said, "The other card is from the Neptune Society. If you know anything about that, what happens if you drop over dead, the local people pick you up, they cremate you, put you in a little box, and mail you back to Dallas." So, Kevin, here it is, buddy. Yeah. I appreciate Kevin. I love him like a son. I really do. As he told you, I've known him for 30 years. It's been interesting to watch him overcome the challenges of life and some of the things that he has done. I've just been amazed. I'm proud of him. In fact, as I watched this wonderful program last night of those plutoniums, those new plutoniums that were up here, and thank you for doing that. And I saw, if that would have been scripted, it couldn't have been better, could it? I mean, that was so wonderful. And as I listened to the ambassador, and as I listened to our other representative that travels around the world and working on volatile situations, and as I watched Kevin, I say this with sincerity and feeling. As Kevin said, I've known 6 United States presidents. I've traveled all over the world. I've worked with a variety of people in all diplomatic positions. And I can say this without hesitation or reservation. Kevin Trudeau has the ability, the knowledge, and the leadership to be leader of this country. He does. If we could get the whole world, or just 51% of the whole world, thinking like the Gen Club members do, we wouldn't have the troubles that we have today. We really would not. And as I see your enthusiasm, I'm lifted here today. I feel great about the opportunity to be here. You give me energy. You give me vitality. As Kevin introduced me, talking about my business in the oil in Texas, I was reminded here some time ago, I was introduced by a fellow in New York City. And he was talking about, it was a group of CEOs and how we all got our starts, whether we started from family money or whether we started from scratch or so forth. And so he got up to introduce me and he said, "I now introduce to you Ed Foreman, a man who made $1 million on oil in Texas." And I got up and I said, "Well, I appreciate your generous introduction, but," I said, "actually it wasn't oil, it was gas. And it wasn't Texas, it was New Mexico. And it wasn't $1 million, it was $2 million. I didn't make it, I lost it. But that gave me the incentive to get going." And back a good many years ago, we started a program for our associates in sharing with them some ideas and them sharing with us their ideas. We got a group of our key leaders together and we said, "What is it that you have been doing, that you have learned? Maybe your mother or your father or a friend told you that has helped you to live a better, richer, happier life." And we got together and we shared those ideas. And the fascinating thing about it is, as we begin to practice those things that I'll share with you today, everybody's life got better. And one day I was in my office and I got this call and I said, "This is CBS News 60 Minutes. We've been reading about this positive attitude development training program you do. We'd like to come in and do a feature on it." Well, I started laughing. I thought it was some friend of mine play a trick on me, you know. I said, "Who is this nut calling anyhow?" He said, "This is CBS News 60 Minutes. We've been reading about this positive attitude development training program that you've initiated in your business and you're sharing with other businesses, and we'd like to come in and do a feature on it." I said, "Well, thank you very much. We wouldn't be interested in talking to you." And I said politely goodbye and hung up the phone. Well, about 10 days later, I got a call from Morley Safer. And Morley Safer, you know who he is. He's one of the head knife wielders on that show to cut you up, you know. He said, "I understand that one of our people called you to invite you to be on CBS News 60 Minutes. You said, 'No, thank you, goodbye,' and hung up the phone." I said, "Morley, you got the message exactly right." He said, "Why wouldn't you be interested in being on our program?" I said, "Simply because I've never seen you do anything positive before in my life." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Anybody you ever had on that show?" I said, "You cut them to ribbons." And I said, "We're not going to subject ourselves to that kind of international ridicule." He said, "Now, wait a minute. You see that show we did on Mrs. Lear, Lear Jet Corporation? Did you see the one we did on Mary Kay Ash, Mary Kay Cosmetics there in Dallas?" I said, "Yeah, I saw that." He said, "Wouldn't you say that those were two fairly positive programs?" I said, "Well, the 100 or more that I've seen or known about, this was back several years ago." I said, "You did do two fairly positive programs." He said, "Well, that's the kind of show we won't do on you." I said, "Well, I'll tell you what." I said, "Morley, you come down, you go through our 3-day, 4-day Successful Life Course program, and if you can begin to develop a more wholesome, positive, outgoing attitude, that ought to prove that it works, and we'll talk to you about doing it." Well, to my surprise, he said, "Okay." And they came in. You ought to have seen them on the first day. They're sitting on the back row. I mean, you know, just like this. Listen to his hokey accent. It is weird. They automatically assumed if you had a southern accent, you couldn't have any intelligence. And but it was interesting. They stayed. And the second day, they moved about halfway up into the class. And they were beginning to nod. And on the third day, it's right on the front row. They're taking notes. Amen. They're saying amen to me like saying, "Sick them to a dog." You know, I was moving on. We finished up on that third day. They said, "This is fascinating. We can hardly wait to come back here and film this and show the people of the world what happens when you begin to develop a wholesome, positive, outgoing attitude." The attitude of the Jen family is actually what he was talking about. And they did a 16-minute segment on CBS News. 60 Minutes was shown across the United States and by satellite around the world. And as a result of that program, we have now had over 30,000 leaders from throughout the world come and participate in this program. And a lot of people say, "Well, so what? The so what is this, ladies and gentlemen? People would not be investing their time, efforts, energy, and money to go halfway around the world to attend a program if it was not having a significant impact on their bottom line. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you the highlights of that three-day program today. And I know some of you may be put off by some of the things that I might say. This is not a fairy tale that I'm talking to you about, but it sounds almost like one sometimes. You know the difference between a fairy tale and a Texas tale, don't you? A fairy tale starts off once upon a time. A Texas tale starts off, you some bitches ain't gonna believe this. But as I listened to those, stories last night, and I heard him talking about that Jeff, and well, you've met KP yet, you become plutonium yet, you made your million yet. I thought about a situation that happened back many years ago, little old town out there in New Mexico. An old boy was sitting at the bar, and his friend come in, and I know we had some karate and some martial arts instructors here last night, but I was reminded that everyone reminded me of a good story. And his friend came in, and man, he was, you know, doing all that stuff like we saw on TV there. And he just walked down, just knocked this guy right over on the bar. And he said, "That's jiu-jitsu from Japan." And his friend kind of straightened up, you know, and kind of got his breath and looked at him. So what's going on here? And then he went, boom. And he just gave him one of those power punches. And he said, "And that's karate from Korea." Just knocked him clear off the bench and into the floor. Old boy got up and wiped himself off, went outside to his pickup. Came back in, the guy sitting there at the bar, he did wham! He knocked him off that bar stool, clear across the room, right up against the wall, and he said, "That's a tar tool from Walmart." Isn't it funny? Isn't it funny how little things trigger your thoughts? Little things trigger your thoughts. I tell things that I shouldn't tell sometimes, but I got tickled. I was thinking about, as Kevin was talking about that business, I still, you know, got the bandages here and so forth, and if you see anything red showing up here, you know I'm pushing it a little bit too much, but I wore a white shirt. But it's funny, I was sitting there this morning in the bathtub. I went out for a walk. It was so pretty out there this morning. If y'all were out there at daybreak and you saw that where the sun was coming up, I mean, God had painted a beautiful picture for us. And I came back in and I developed a little bit of perspiration. I thought, I've got to shower off before I go in there because some of those people get close to me, they smell me. And so I couldn't fill the bathtub. I couldn't take a shower because it'd get this wet. So I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll take a bath. And I filled a bathtub up. I'm going to sit down where it's about right here. And I started giggling. And I was thinking about an old boy in Portales, New Mexico, that was telling about, said he was taking off to work one morning, met the milkman coming up the street. And he said, "By the way, whenever you get up there to my house," he said, "leave more milk than usual." He said, "My wife's been reading about one of these beauty magazines, and it said take a milk bath, and it would help her with her complexion and her body and her skin." He said, "Sure, I'll be happy to." He said, "You want it pasteurized?" And he said, "No, just up to her tits will be high enough. I want to bathe her, not drown her, you know." I know I tell some stories I shouldn't tell, but yeah, I was thinking the other day, whenever you get old enough and rich enough, you can say pretty near anything you want to say. Yeah. And I try not to get too ugly. I just try to keep it down homespun and tell you stories about real happenings that happened. But let me ask you a question or two or three as we get into this morning. How many of you would truly like to have a good day every day? Would you raise your hand, please? That looks like pretty well all the way around the room. If you didn't raise your hand on that one, you probably didn't understand the question, right? How many of you like to have a good day all day, every day? Would you raise? Woo! Man, how many? Here's the real ringer, and think about this a minute before you respond. How many of you think it's possible to have a good day all day, every day? Would you raise? Congratulations. The majority, the great overwhelming majority of you raised your hands. But ladies and gentlemen, do you know that in most audience, when I ask that third question, about half the people sit there and say, now, wait a minute. You don't realize who I'm married to. You don't realize who I work with. You don't realize some of the difficult people I have to deal with. It's absolutely impossible for me to have a good day all day, every day. Let me ask you this. Who decides whether you're going to have a good day all day, every day or not? Isn't that interesting? You make that decision unless you give that power to someone else. But you and I both know people, don't we? Yeah, can be taken off to their destination, have a little fender bender on the way, and look at my new car, all scratched up. I mean, they'll complain about it all day. Some of them will gripe about it a week. And then you know people who can roll their car over on the way in. I mean, roll it over three times, total it out, get out in one piece, and say, boy, ain't I lucky? The good Lord must have been riding with me. See, it's not what happens to us that's so important as our reaction to what happens to us. It's exactly what Kevin was talking about last night. It's looking for the gold. It's looking for the good in every single thing that happens to us in our life. Had a lady come into my office not too long ago, and she said, I am just so depressed. And I said, I beg your pardon. She said, I am just so depressed. And I said, well, ma'am, how do you act when you're depressed? She said, how do I want? I said, how do you act? You know, how do you talk when you're depressed? She said, well, I kind of talk through my nose in a whining, nasal, bitching sound, kind of like this. I said, well, how do you walk whenever you're depressed? She said, well, I kind of take slow, sliding steps, kind of like this. Let my shoulders slump forward. I said, well, let's try something. I said, get up and try walking across the office. Take a little longer, springier step. Hold your shoulders back. Hold your head up. Put a smile on your face. Act like you feel good. She looked at me kind of puzzled. She got up. She started to cross the office. She was taking a little longer, springier step, had her shoulders back, her head up, about a half smile on her face. She looked at me over her shoulder, and she said, you know what? I do feel a little bit better.
Here's this week's code. 3ER42W. That's 3E as in elephant, R as in rain, 4, 2, W as in water. Go to globalinformationnetwork.com/bonus and type in 3ER42W.
Now, any time in the future you get to feeling down and out, here's what you do. You just sit down in a chair like this and you just jump up and you say, I'm depressed. See, you cannot act happy and enthusiastic and be depressed. That's what Kevin was talking about last night on the actions and the words. See, here's what happens so many times, ladies and gentlemen. People will say, I'm not feeling very good today. Meaning, I'm not acting very happy, positive, confident, or enthusiastic today. You know where I got this idea? I got this idea from my great friend and mentor many years ago, Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. And he called it the as-if principle. He said, if there be a quality that you desire to have, act as if you have it. So if you say, I'm not feeling very good, what you're actually saying is that I am not acting very good. Now, when you begin to act better, when you begin to say good things to you, when you put a spring in your step and a song in your heart, what happens? Am I moving too fast? What happens? You feel better, right? So what happens is when you act like you feel better, you feel better. And some people say to me, well, wait a minute for a minute. If I'm not sincerely feeling happy and enthusiastic, I'm not going to put on any false front and act like I'm happy and enthusiastic. And you know what I say to them? I'd 10-1 rather have someone around me that was acting like they were happy and enthusiastic than a sincere sorehead anytime. Wasn't you? Yeah. Because the person that begins to act that way begins to feel that way. Now, when you feel that way, you begin to reinforce the acting. Now, if you're neither acting nor feeling, what can you do? You can start the thinking process by what you read, what you listen to, the kind of people you associate with, as you do right here in the gym club. And when you begin to think better, what happens? You begin to act better. When you begin to think better, you begin to feel better. When you begin to feel better, you begin to think better. When you begin to act better, you begin to think better. So, as simple as this sounds, it's inextricably tied together. Now, the lesson is that the easiest way to get into this whole process is by the way you act. Do you act like a winner? Do you act like you're happy? Do you act like the successful person that you desire to become? See, the fascinating thing about it is you act your way into the life that you want to have. That's the kind of thing that I'm talking to you about. You know who the happiest person in this room is today? I'm glad to hear that. Me, I am, we are. The happiest person in this room today is the person that is thinking the happiest thoughts and acting the happiest there is. See, the fascinating thing about it is you don't catch depression. You create it by the thoughts you put in your mind. You don't catch happiness. You create it by the thoughts you put in your mind. So what do? You begin to give yourself positive self-talk. What you say to yourself, remember words. You heard Kevin say it last night. Words are more important even than thoughts. So start saying to yourself, I'm alive, I'm alert, I feel great. Let's try that right now. I'm alive, I'm alert, I feel great. Act like you mean it. Some of you are sitting there and likely you may need to use your finger, you know. I'm alive, I'm alert, I feel great. Now we find that if you put it into action, you feel better and it takes a better hold on your psyche. So everybody stand, please, and pretend you got a punching bag hanging right there in front of you, and you're going to punch it out like this. You're going to say, I'm alive, I'm alert, I feel great. Harder, I'm alive, I'm alert, I feel great. One more time, I'm alive, I'm alert, I feel great. All right. Woo! Yeah. Now, I don't know about you, but that makes me feel better. Start saying, I'm grateful, I'm thankful, I'm appreciative. I'm grateful, I'm thankful, I'm appreciative. I'm grateful, I'm thankful, I'm appreciative. What are you grateful for? I'm grateful for a strong, healthy, dynamic, vibrant body that continues to function. I'm grateful for a wonderful family. I'm grateful for the wonderful friends that I have in Chris and Brian and Ted and Tom and MT and Dr. C and all the wonderful people that I've met in this great club. I'm grateful, thankful, and appreciative for a wonderful family, for the opportunity to do what I want to do and to travel around this great world. See, think each morning as you awaken, I'm grateful, I'm thankful, I'm appreciative. As you go to bed at night, I'm grateful, I'm thankful, I'm appreciative. Think about that. I'm happy, I'm healthy, I'm terrific. All of those kinds of things begin to put that positivity into your mind. See, the interesting thing about it is we are the ones that control it. It's not the outside circumstances unless we let the outside circumstances. Whenever I talk about this, I'm reminded of a situation that happened back many years ago. We had an outstanding gentleman in one of our classes by the name of Judge Ziegler. He's a brother to Zig Ziegler, who is also one of our graduates back many, many years ago. He said, you know, Ed, whenever you talk about that good day stuff, he said, I'm reminded of a situation that happened to me when I was a little bitty boy. I said, well, bounce up here, Judge, and share it with us. He said, well, give you a little bit of a background. He said, when I was 2 years old, he said, my father died. And my mama was left there at home on a farm with 12 children to raise. He said, I was the youngest of those 12 children. He said, I'll never forget a situation that happened when I was 5 years old. Every morning about 5 o'clock, Mother would come in out of the room while I was asleep. She'd come over and she'd put her hand on my shoulder and she'd say, son, get up. We're going to have a good time today. He said, I'd jump out of that little bunk. I'd go running in there to the kitchen. I'd sit down on a little three-legged milk stool by the wood cook stove where Mama was fixing breakfast. She'd throw a quilt around my shoulders, pour me about a half cup of coffee, about half milk, and I'd sit there and sip that coffee while Mama was fixing breakfast. Well, this particular time, and the other children would be out doing the chores, milking the cows, feeding the hogs, doing the things that need to be done. And they'd all come in, we'd have breakfast together, and they'd take on off to school. Because I was too young to go to school, I'd stay there and help Mama do the work that needed to be done there at home on the farm. Well, this particular time I'm thinking about, we were picking turnip greens. I don't know if any of y'all ever picked turnip greens before. Any of y'all ever picked turnip greens? Oh, yeah, I can see we got some turnip green pickers out there. I knew it was a good crowd. That's along in the winter time of the year, and we'd been down there in the field, and we picked several baskets of those turnip greens. We brought them back up out of the house. We had a big old long wooden bench with three big old tubs of water where we'd wash those turnip greens. Well, I went out there that morning to wash those turnip greens, and there was a layer of ice about a quarter of an inch thick frozen across the top of each one of those tubs. I got me an old axe handle, and I went along there, and I broke the ice on top of each tub. I'd get me a big old double handful of those turnip greens. I'd dunk them down there in that first tub, then I'd wash them off in that second tub, rinse them off in that third tub, put them out, pile them over on the porch, and Mom would tie them into bundles, and we'd put them into cardboard boxes, take them down to the general store and swap them for sugar and flour and stuff we didn't raise there at home on the farm. Well, this particular time, I was washing those turnip greens, and I looked down at my hands, and my hands were just so small, and they were just so cold that my fingers had turned numb, and I hurt, and I ached, and I was just miserably cold from the tip of my toes to the top of my hand. And I turned to my mother and I said, Mama, I'm not having a good time today. And that night, whenever I went to bed, I was still aching and cold and miserable. Next morning, 5 o'clock, just like she always did, Mama come in there, she put her hand on my shoulder and she said, son, get up. We're going to have a good time today. I just rolled over and I pulled that quilt over my head and I said, no, I'm not going to get up. It's going to be a bad day. Well, she just turned around, went on back into the kitchen, started fixing breakfast. The other children came in doing the chores, had breakfast, went on to school. Mother went on out to work. About 10 o'clock, I heard her in the kitchen. I got up and came walking in. She looked at me. She said, what are you doing in here? I said, well, I got up to have some breakfast and help you do the work around here. She said, oh, no. No, son. She said, don't you remember? You made the decision this morning it was going to be a bad day. And she said, son, it's going to be a bad day all day long. And she took me right back in there and put me right back in that bed. Now, you'd think any mama would let her little boy get up to have lunch. But bless that dear mother just from the heart of mine, I stayed right there in that bunk right through lunch. I didn't even get to get up for supper. It was the longest, most miserable, bad day I ever spent in my young life. Next morning, 5 o'clock, just like she always did, Mama come in there, she put her hand on my shoulder, and she said, Son, get up. We're going to have a good time today. I bounced up out of that bed. I went running in there. I sat down on that little three-legged milk stool. Mama threw that quilt around my shoulder, and I started sipping that coffee. And right then and there, I learned a lesson I've never, ever forgotten. And that's this, that you and you alone make the decision. Every single day is whether you're going to have a good day or whether you're going to have a bad day. See, it's not that upset spouse or friend or client or traffic situation. It's you and you alone. And people say, well, Ed, you just don't understand the troubles, the trials and tribulations we've faced recently. We've had challenges in our family. We've had financial setbacks. We've had a death in the family, or maybe my spouse left me. You want me to be happy in those circumstances? Only if you want to have a good life. People say, oh, my spouse left me, and they really start putting them down. If you tell enough people negatively enough that your spouse left you, they're going to know why your spouse left you. People say, I suppose you'd be happy and enthusiastic if you just lost your job. Only if you want to get another job. See, if you go around telling everybody what a no good, sorry company that was that you worked for, how ill-managed it was, you think they want to hire you? They got enough of those people already. So what I'm talking about, positive thinking works when you want your life to get better. See, this program works. That's why I am so excited to see what you have put together here. And I know we praise Kevin. Kevin's good and he got it started and he's a wonderful person. But so is Chris and so is Blaine. And so is this. I've never seen a better, more professional, organized team as we got in the leadership of this great organization. They have done what I'd like to have done. They just knew how and they got the youthful vitality to make it happen. So the basics that we teach is this. We say that life is dealing with those situations and moving on. Remember this, that pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. You may get knocked down, but get up. If you get knocked down, try to fall back so you can bounce up forward, you know. So what happens is you dump the trash often. Move on. Look for the good, the wholesome, and the positive in everything that happens. And so how do we do this? It's fairly simple. We say that life, and everything I talk about is pretty easy for you to do. You don't even have to take that many notes. We say that life is for laughing, loving, and living. That it ain't just for whining, worrying, and working. Amen? Well, give me an amen, and I'll do a whole lot better. And you know, people look at that and they'll say, yeah, that's right. Whenever I laugh, I feel better. We have 7 medical doctors on our staff that tell us that laughter is almost like stationary jogging. It just moves all the muscles and organs in your body and helps you feel better. Furthermore, they tell us that laughter helps you to get rid of gas. So if any of you feel a buildup here today, just laugh out loud, you know. Try to find the appropriate spot to do it so you don't look too conspicuous whenever you do. But scientifically, here's what we found, is that when you laugh, you secrete natural hormones in your system known as endorphins. Endorphins are 200 times as powerful as morphine. They give you a positive orientation to life. So what happens is when you laugh, you don't say, ha, 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 I'm about to go bankrupt, ha, 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 I'm about to lose my job, I'm about to go, ha, ha, I'm about to get a divorce. You don't do that. See, when you laugh, you think better thoughts. You begin to program yourself for positivity. We have a great assistant in our program that works with us. We have 7 outstanding health professionals. And Dr. Phil Williams, who's an outstanding neurosurgeon there in Dallas, was telling about a situation that he implemented in this. He said that when people come in to him and they're upset and they're distressed, he will write them out a simple little prescription that calls for 15 seconds of laughter every morning and 15 seconds of laughter every afternoon. He said, I don't care where you are, what you're doing, you just stop mid-morning, you set your clock or timer right up on your dashboard, your desk, your condenser, wherever it is, and for 15 seconds, you laugh just as loud and as hard and as forcefully as you can. Now he said, Ed, here's what we found. We found that when those uptight, frustrated, anxiety-ridden people would stop and laugh for 15 seconds, they couldn't be uptight and frustrated. But he said, more importantly, within a week, we found some significant improvements in those individuals' lives. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's what I'm going to ask you to do. I'm going to ask you to go through that little prescription with me. In just a minute, I'm going to look at my watch, and whenever I say go, you're going to laugh just as loud and as hard and as forceful as you can. I don't mean you're just going to sit there and grin or giggle. I'm talking about good old belly shaking, gas passing laughter. I mean, you're just going to let her go. Now, if there's anybody sitting there saying, well, tell me something to make me laugh. You may be in a situation sometime where there's nobody around to tell you anything to make you laugh. So think of something as positive and as uplifting as you possibly can. Turn the corners of your mouth up. You begin to wiggle your belly, and pretty soon you begin to catch it from yourself. Now, if you're sitting there by somebody and you're saying, oh, isn't this weird? Isn't this dumb? Give them an elbow. Give them a knee. Get them going, and we're going to go through it. And whenever I say stop, we're going to stop, and we're going to come back and diagnose the feeling that we have as a result of this little prescription. Everybody understand what the rules are? All right, everybody ready? Go! Come on, you can do better than that. All right. Stop. Woo! Wow! Isn't that a good feeling? Woo! You know, it's a good thing you got dark slacks on, isn't it? Woo! You know, it's a good thing you got dark slacks on. The other day, a lady jumped up and went running out like this, you know. Sometimes it makes things other than endorphins flow. But you notice that tingling sensation that goes up your back as a result of that? Notice how your heart begins to beat more rapidly. You begin to get more oxygen and glucose to your brain. Laughter is a wonderful elixir for well-being, and it works with amazing results.
This has been a presentation of the Global Information Network.